scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captive of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And welcome back to Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, Editor-in-Chief. And we've had a big week this last week for news on technocracy around the world. I'm going to pick just a few stories today to talk about. But technocracy indeed is marching on. We see it in the presidential campaign in the United States. We see it in Europe. We see it in China. We see it in India. We see it in Africa now as well. And even in South America, technocracy is becoming a very predominant meme around the world. And more people are talking about it as well. That's an interesting thing. I don't know how much Technocracy News and Trends has been responsible for raising the discussion and elevating the word technocracy to be a more popular word amongst analysts, but it is. And I will say this, though, Technocracy News is the only website on the internet anywhere in the world that deals exclusively on technocracy, at least from a critical point of view. So this is still an interesting thing. A lot of people are picking up articles from Technocracy News on other websites and posting them, reposting them. A lot of activity on social media as well. But there is no other website in the world that's dedicated to a critical analysis of technocracy. So we are unique in that. And you can look, if you ever find another site, I wish you'd let me know. I'd like to know where they are and who they are. But today we're going to talk about a few things, a little bit eclectic perhaps. The first thing I want to talk about is killer robots. This is something that really drives me nuts. The headline of this story is Killer Robots, Still No International Laws to Govern Their Use. I wrote at the top of this story, technocrats and militaries around the world are in a pitched arms race to develop fully autonomous killer robots. Proponents claim that it will make warfare more efficient and yet at the same time more humane because fewer people would be killed, they say, of course. This is insane thinking. The risk of misuse by rogue and authoritarian government and terrorists is 100%. In other words, it's an absolute certainty that rogue actors will pick up on these killer robots and use this technology for themselves. Every other weapon known to man has been used by terrorists over the years. Why on earth would they think these wouldn't be used? This is the perfect solution for a terrorist. You never have to risk getting shot. However, in any case, technocrats invent because they can, not because there is a demonstrated need to do so. The article itself states countries are rapidly developing killer robots, that is, machines with artificial intelligence that independently kill. But they're moving at a snail's pace on agreeing on global rules over their use in future wars, so warns technology and human rights experts. From drones and missiles to tanks and submarines, semi-autonomous weapons systems have been used for decades to eliminate targets in modern-day warfare, but they all have human supervision. That's a key difference here. Nations such as the United States, Russia, and Israel are now investing in developing lethal autonomous weapon systems. The acronym for that is LAWS, L-A-W-S, by the way, which can identify target and kill a person all on their own. But to date, there are no international laws governing their use. Some kind of human control is necessary. Only humans can make context-specific judgments of distinction, proportionality, and precautions in combat, said Peter Maurer, president of the International Committee of the Red Cross. I might add, too, it'll be the Red Cross picking up the bodies. He continues, building consensus is the big issue we are dealing with, and surprisingly, those who have today invested a lot of capacities do not have certain skill which promise advantages to them, are more reluctant than those who don't. The ICRC oversaw the adoption of the 1949 Geneva Convention that defined the laws of war and the rights of civilians to protection and assistance during conflicts. and it engages with governments to adapt these rules to modern warfare. AI researchers, defense analysts, and roboticists say laws such as military robots are no longer confined to the realm of science fiction or video games, but are fast progressing from graphic design boards to defense engineering laboratories. That would be, for instance, DARPA. Within a few years, there could be deployed by state militaries to the battlefield, they add, painting dystopian scenarios of swarms of drones moving through a town or city, scanning and selectively killing their targets within seconds. I want to add that I included a video, a very controversial video, called Slaughterbots. You perhaps have seen this before. It was a proof of concept video, not a serious video, I might add. It was done supposedly by some professor at Berkeley, I believe, University of California. But it's a very dramatic type of a video, and it clearly displays the capability, at least a theoretical capability, of what autonomous drones could do if they carried even a small explosive charge. So this is death by algorithm. This has raised ethical concerns from human rights groups and some tech experts who say giving machines the power of life and death violates the principles of human dignity. Not only are laws vulnerable to interference and hacking, which would result in increased civilian deaths, they add, but their deployment would raise questions over who would be held accountable in the event of misuse. Don't be mistaken by the nonsense of how intelligent these weapons will be, said Noel Sharkey, chairman of the International Committee for Robot Arms Control. You simply can't trust an algorithm, no matter how smart, to seek out, identify, and kill the correct target, especially in the complexity of war, said Sharkey, who is also an AI and robotics expert at Britain's University of Sheffield. The story continues, but you can see the dilemma before us. Somewhere along the way, nations need to agree on the use of these types of robotic systems, because if they don't, there will come a time when one of the nations that are developing these types of weapons will push a button and use them, and then off to the races we will all be. There's never been a weapon, by the way, developed by any government in the history of the world that was not eventually used, and often it was used against their own citizens as well. So this is a very serious topic. I'll repeat again, technocrats invent because they can, not because there's a demonstrated need to do so. We don't need autonomous killing robots. The next story is really interesting because it involves the International Monetary Fund. Those of you who have followed me for some time know that I have an economic background. Going all the way back to the time of college when I actually studied economics, it was the Keynesian model of economics, by the way, so my college education was a total waste. I had to relearn economic systems the correct way after I got out of university, and that took me another several years to get my head screwed on straight before I could understand anything. But I was fortunate to have teamed up with the late and eminent Professor Anthony C. Sutton, who was, in fact, a professor of economics at UCLA before he went to Stanford. And he became a research fellow at the Hoover Institution for War, Peace, and Revolution at Stanford. And when Stanford gave him the boot, I ran into Tony Sutton at a gold conference, and we struck up a relationship and decided that we should write a newsletter on the Trilateral Commission, which was pledged to create a new international economic order. What I didn't understand, he did. And he mentored me. I'll be forever grateful to him for that, for giving me an education as well as the skills to do high-level research that would uncover the various things that the global elite were doing in the economic realm. But the IMF now, again, with a new chief at the helm, is piping off about the future of the world economic system. This is very interesting to me because this new IMF chief is warning on a Great Depression number two. Now, the first Great Depression started with the famous crash of the stock market in 1929. Lasted for 10 years at least. It was a horrible period of time. And the new IMF director, Kristalina Georgieva, addressed the Peterson Institute, which was founded by the late Trilateral Commission member, Peter G. Peterson. He lived from 1926 to 2018. The Peterson Board of Directors is a who's who of other trilateral members. Now, mind you, Professor Sutton and myself tracked all of the members of the Trilateral Commission way back when it first started from 1973 onwards. Peter G. Peterson was one of the premier core members of the Trilateral Commission. But other members, past and present, include some familiar names. You'll recognize some of these, I'm sure. How about Alan Greenspan, Frank Loy, George Shultz, former Secretary of State, Ernesto Zedillo, former President of Mexico, Robert Zoellick, former U.S. Trade Representative, Stanley Fisher, Richard N. Cooper, C. Fred Bergsten. How about Larry Summers? Yeah, there's others too. And that's just the Board of Directors. The Board of Advisors is full of trilaterals as well. Georgieva lays much of the future blame on global warming, by the way. The moral hazard here, though, is enormous because the IMF wants to kill capitalism and free enterprise, and moreover, it has the power and influence to do it. The malinvestment of trillions of dollars into futile and unproductive green investments breeds a self-fulfilling prophecy. And that is exactly what we're seeing today around the world, with trillions of dollars being pushed towards green, sustainable investments that eventually will be doomed to fail. The money that they dump into it will evaporate, and the world indeed will at some point be driven into a Great Depression too. The article states the head of the International Monetary Fund has warned the global economy risks a return to the Great Depression driven by inequality and financial sector instability. Speaking at the Peterson Institute of International Economics in Washington, Kristalina said new IMF research, which compares the current economy to the Roaring Twenties that culminated in the great market crash of 1929, revealed that a similar trend was already underway. While the inequality gap between countries has closed in the last two decades, I don't know where she gets her information on that, by the way, it had increased within countries, she said, singling out the UK for particular criticism. In the UK, for example, the top 10% now control nearly as much wealth as the bottom 50%. The situation is mirrored across much of the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development nations, where income and wealth inequality have reached or are near record highs. She added, in some ways, this troubling trend is reminiscent of the early part of the 20th century, when the twin forces of technology and integration led to the first Gilded Age, the Roaring Twenties, and ultimately, financial disaster. She warned that fresh issues such as the climate emergency and increased trade protectionism meant the next 10 years were likely to be characterized by social unrest and financial market volatility. If I had to identify a theme at the outset of this new decade, it would be increasing uncertainty, she said. I would say amen to that, by the way. With disputes still raging between the U.S. and Europe, she said, quote, the global trading system is in need of a significant upgrade. Well, Georgieva, what kind of a significant upgrade would you recommend? I will suggest she's right behind the wall rooting for technocracy. This is sustainable development from the United Nations, warmed over technocracy from the 1930s, a resource-based economic system where resources are taken away from the people, put into global common trust, and managed by the same global elite that took them away from the people in the first place. So keep your eye on the IMF. The IMF now, of course, if you don't know who they are, I think you should, but if you don't, it is one of the primary banking, financial, monetary policy organizations in the world that serves globalization. The other organization that works with it in tandem is the World Bank, and also the Bank for International Settlements in Basel, Switzerland, which is conveniently known as the central bank to central bankers. So keep your eye on the IMF. More to come there for sure. The next story is far from anecdotal. There's some science behind this, truly. The title of the story is China's Doom. That's my title, by the way. Birth rate is now the lowest since the nation was founded in 1949. That's when China became Communist China originally, after World War II, when the communists took over. They implemented, you remember, the single child policy, where people could only have one baby. They wanted to cut down a population. Well, they've done it. And not only have they done it, but their birth rate is now so low that it has fallen below the level from which any nation in history has ever recovered from, making it near impossible to build their population over a period of time. Now, they may get other people come to their country, maybe immigrants, maybe they'll sucker a few Americans to come over there or something. We have our own problems with demographics. But in the end of it, China will disappear, just like the United States, because they cannot reproduce their population. I wrote at the top of this story, China's technocrats have sealed the nation's ultimate destruction by killing its citizens' desire to reproduce. Half of all Chinese families are now refusing to have more than one child, even if allowed to do so, and they are now. But people simply don't want to have children. They're used to not having children now. They have concerns about the future for all kinds of reasons, financial security being one of them, but now they're holding back, purposely and intentionally, to not have children. South Korea, by the way, and Japan are in the same situation. Their birth rate has fallen below the replacement level. So the article states, China's birth rate in 2019 hit its lowest level since the founding of the People's Republic in 1949, according to official statistics released by Beijing Friday. Chinese mothers gave birth to 14.65 million children last year, a birth rate of 10.48 babies per 1,000 people, according to figures from the National Bureau of Statistics. China's demographic issues could pose serious issues for the world's second largest economy when the current working age population reaches retirement. Experts worry that if the trend continues or the population begins shrinking, China may get old before it gets rich. Demographers have long pointed to China's one-child policy as a culprit of the country's current population problems. For decades, couples in China were limited to only having a single child, unless they were willing to break the law, some did, of course, or had the money to work around the system. In other words, bribe somebody. Experts say the policy had dire effects on age demographics and sex ratio, as many poor rural families who prize boys due to traditional cultural values went to extreme measures to ensure their child's sex. Let me pause just a minute and explain exactly what happened. There is no statistic on record that says how many girl babies were killed after they were born, because if they could only have one child, they needed to have a boy in rural settings. They needed to have a boy that was strong enough to work the farm. And that's why so many boys were born as opposed to girls. But the girls were actually born in the same proportion as anywhere else. They got killed. The boys lived on. And now they have a boy problem, too many, and not enough women. The article continues, more than 250 million Chinese were over 60 years old last year, the statistics released Friday reveal. They make up more than 18% of the population. So you can see the problem is on them right now. The figure is forecast to rise to a third of the population by 2050, or 480 million people. A study published by the leading state-sponsored Chinese think tank last year found that the country will face an unstoppable population decline over the coming decades, with fewer and fewer workers struggling to support an increasingly aging society. The ruling Communist Party, I will add the ruling Technocrat Party, has attempted to combat demographic issues by encouraging families to have more babies. But middle-class families are worried to do so because of financial considerations. So isn't it magnanimous of China now to say, well, I guess we made a mistake with all that one-child business. You better have more babies now. Come on, step it up. Get out there. Get busy. Go enjoy yourself somewhere under a tree and have babies. And the people are looking at them and saying, are you crazy? We don't want to have babies. We're so used to not having babies, we don't ever want babies again. So China's headed for a brick wall, just like the United States is. It's just amazing to me how little people have paid attention to demographers over the last 20 to 30 years. They have been sounding the alarm for decades. Nobody has listened. Nobody has paid attention. And there's only a very few places on planet Earth that is producing more people than the people that they already have. In other words, where the birth rate is high enough to grow a population. So they will listen to them sooner or later. We will also, in the United States, sooner or later, when we realize that we also are a dying race, a dying country. The last story I'd like to talk about will leave you with a little bit of good news. I would normally like to throw in a good news story just to be an encouragement to you. The title of this story is Telecoms, that is the wireless giants in the world, Telecoms face major global resistance to 5G rollout. I did a little research today, by the way, drove around my area in Arizona just to see if I could find some of those early 5G antennas that are being erected. They call them small cell towers. They typically sit lower than the 4G tower that sits up maybe on a very high pole. These sit down low, much closer to street level. And I found several, actually. They're coming, and they're probably coming to a neighborhood close to you as well. So I wrote this story. You'll never see or hear about success stories of 5G protest or blocking legislation. Yet there are dozens of nations throwing up roadblocks over the potential health risk of electromagnetic radiation and over data privacy. And I just have to say, 5G is not a fait accompli, not by a long shot. They can put them up, but they can be taken down just as fast. This article states, the telecommunication companies and the mainstream media would have you believe that the race to roll out 5G is unstoppable, that you are nothing and no one in the face of a lethal multi-trillion dollar agenda imposed by some of the most powerful entities on the planet. They thought that if they called their new alleged communication technology, adapted from the military, by the way, active denial technology, calling it 5G or fifth generation, the public would just assume that it's more of the same as 4G, 3G, or 2G. And if they could characterize the rollout as a race, the public would not have enough time to find out what a killer technology 5G is. How wrong they were. Not only has the public found out, but now they know how lethal previous generations of the wireless technology to be used concurrently with 5G are as well. And I want to add here that even though 5G towers are going up around the country, they're not taking down the 4G towers. They're still there, and they're still radiating just as much EMF pollution as ever. So 5G is going to be in addition to 4G, to LTE, and it looks also like the 3G antennas are not coming down either. The article continues, below is the evidence from a number of different countries that the pushback is huge and growing. The telcos have lost the propaganda war. Despite their control of the mainstream media, from which not a whisper of the dangers of 5G is heard, and of social media and YouTube, who have been desperately deleting millions of accounts to silence the naysayers. And yes, YouTube and other social media accounts have been kicking people out that talk about the negative side effects of 5G. Can you imagine that? Censorship in America. Wow. The article continues. As this article went to press, support arrived from an unexpected source. In an impassioned speech before the United Nations General Assembly on September 24, 2019, UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson, that is Bojo as he's affectionately known by other Brits, stated that digital authoritarianism is not the stuff of dystopian fantasy, but of an emerging reality. He described the Internet of Things, smart cities, and AI as a giant dark thundercloud lowering ever more oppressively over the human race, a gathering force reshaping the future of humanity over which the human race has no control and from which, in future, there may be nowhere to hide. He asked if algorithms could be trusted with our lives and hopes and whether machines should be allowed to doom us to a cold and heartless future in an Orwellian world designed for censorship, repression, and control. He recalled the Universal Declaration of Human Rights and endorsed its ideals of upholding freedom of opinion and expression, the privacy of home and correspondence, and the right to seek and impart information and ideas. He exhorted the academic committees, company boards, and industry standards groups who are writing the rule books of the future, making ethical judgments, as if they had any ethical standards in the first place, and choosing what will or will not be rendered possible, to find the right balance between freedom and control, between innovation and regulation, between private enterprise and government oversight. He insisted that the ethical judgments inherent in the design of new technology must be made transparent to all, and that joint efforts must be made to agree to a common set of global principles to shape the norms and standards that will guide the development of emerging technology. We can be certain it's not going to happen that way, but good thought. The article continues, what follows is a citizen journalist list of the actions taken to halt 5G and reports and complaints that have discredited this Machiavellian attempt to foist a disastrous technology on the world in 2019. It is not an exhaustive list, and I extend my apologies to all those whose efforts I may have overlooked here, and much gratitude to all who have contributed to making this pushback so successful. However, we cannot afford to be complacent, and in particular, we must work to stop the use of Earth orbits and other stratosphere to beam 5G down to Earth, for this puts the ionosphere and the entire planet at risk. We must also work to ensure that the use of streetlights with blue light for this anti-life agenda is rapidly reversed. The effort to stop 5G is still gathering momentum, and we must continue to work together tirelessly to protect all life on Earth and the planet itself until this demented plan is relegated to the history books as the most deceptive scheme in the history of humankind. And what follows is a list of some 50 different initiatives around the world that are pushing back on 5G. You have to go and read the article on technocracy.news to see that list, but I recommend that you do that. Just go see who's pushing back. Maybe you could find some of these stories and take them to your local city council people and say, you know, if you're not aware of what's going on around the world with 5G, you're not paying attention. And I want you to pay attention. So here's a list of articles and countries and whatever that you need to know about. The name of this article, again, is Telecoms Face Major Global Resistance to 5G Rollout. If you haven't had a chance yet to read Technocracy, The Hard Road to World Order, or my first book, Technocracy Rising, The Trojan Horse of Global Transformation, I strongly suggest that you do. If you know somebody in your community, by the way, that needs to know about this, give them a gift copy. If you go to technocracy.news and go to the store, you can buy a book and ship it to anybody you want. In other words, you pay for the book, you have the billing address that you put in, but in the shipping address, you can put in anybody's name or anybody's address you want, and we will deliver it to them directly. Also, if you haven't been aware of it, if you go to the Quick Start page on technocracy.news, you will find in the right-hand column that all 12 articles of the 12 Days of Christmas, which turned into the 12 Days of Technocracy, that all those articles are displayed in the right-hand column, 1 through 12. Article number 13 is coming soon, by the way. It's going to be on regionalization in America, another globalist initiative to transform America away from being a constitutional republic into something that more closely resembles the original Soviet Union, which, of course, did specialize in regionalization. It's happening in America now as well. This is something that we also must pay attention to, and it's a local issue, so it's something that can be fought locally. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.